We've taken our microphones backstage at the Pheasant Run Playhouse for a chat with a gal who is well known to televiewers, theatergoers, nightclubbers, and radio listeners, too. She's Rose Marie, and she's currently appearing in the comedy Everybody's Girl at the popular Dinner Theater in St. Charles. Welcome, Rose Marie, to Those Were the Days.
Thank you.
I'd like to talk with you about your retirement.
My retirement.
About your retirement.
You mean the one I'm going to make or the one I never made?
Your first retirement. Not that you're never going to retire.
I don't know about that.
But the first retirement. My spies, my nostalgic spies, tell me that you retired from show business at the age of 12.
Well, yes, actually, because I was sort of in that awkward age which the children don't go through today, you know, but 12 or 13, getting into your teens in those days, was really a very awkward age. You were, I don't know, too fat and too ugly and not anything of anything, really.
Well, I don't imagine you were either.
Oh, I was, believe me. Take my word for it, I know.
Well, of course, we're referring to the phase of your career in show business where you were known all over the United States as Baby Rose Marie.
That's right.
And you starred on network radio at the age of...
Six.
Six.
Yes. Well, I started, actually, in show business when I was three.
Uh-huh.
I'd won an amateur contest, and then I'd gone to Atlantic City, and some people had heard me singing on the beach, and the station WPG in Atlantic City
mm-hmm.
offered me a thing to go on the air and sing, and I never sounded like a child. I've always had this deep, husky voice. It's a little sore right now, but it's usually about the same. And so I went on the radio program, and I was on there for, I don't know, a few months or so, and then NBC had heard about it in New York, and then I went into New York, and then I had my own show, Coast to Coast, Sunday mornings at 12:15, and I was about 5 or 6 years old.
What was the name of that show?
It was just called Baby Rose Marie, and it was with a piano player
uh-huh.
and an announcer, and the sponsor was Julius Grossman Shoes. Bad feet deserve him, and good feet need him. That was the commercial.
Well, you were discovered on the from the amateur show, then it
well, my,
its
my,
way into
my
this, right?
Parents, my friends of my parents, uh-huh. actually had entered me into the contest. My mother didn't know. I mean, I used to sing and do all that at home, but she didn't uh-huh. know whether I would do it in front of anybody, and so they had entered me in this contest, and I sang, "What Can I Say, Dear, After I Say I'm Sorry?" And at 4 years old or 3 years old, I mean, how can you beat that, good or bad, you know?
An American institution.
Yeah, you know, but, and then having my own radio show later on, and it just kept building up, and I had gotten so many letters saying that, well, that's not a child. No child sings like that, because radio, of course, they couldn't see, and they said, that has to be a 45-year-old midget. You know, I never sounded, when I sang, like a child. So I made a tour of theaters throughout the United States to prove that I was a child, and played in each city, and each city that I was there on a Sunday, I would do the radio show from there.
So you were actually doing a almost remote broadcast from across the country?
Well, yeah, in a way, yeah, because it was almost vaudeville, you know, working at the theater and then doing the program, because it was a coast-to-coast program.
Did you do anything besides singing?
No.
Did you dance or anything like that?
No, I can't dance even today.
Can't?
No.
Oh, I must have seen you dance on the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Oh, but that kind, I don't consider dancing. But, no, it was just the unusual voice and the being able to sound like a grown-up person instead of a child. And then as I grew older, I got to develop, I guess, a sense of humor, I don't know. And it just started going from there on in. And I went into nightclubs when I was 16, doing comedy and singing and a nightclub act.
Mm-hmm. You were known before the nightclub days as the little girl with the big voice.
No. That was Mary Small.
Mary Small.
Mary Small, that wasn't me.
Now, what was Mary Small, a child
Mary
star at
Small,
the same time?
Sort of, yes. Uh-huh. She was on another program, I think it was a children's program or something, and child stars were very fashionable in those days, you know. And, but I don't know, there was something unusual about it. See, that was it. There were a lot of children that sang and danced, and were very talented, I'm sure, but nobody sounded as I did. You know, it wasn't believable with me because it didn't sound like a child.
Well, once you got involved in this, did your mother encourage you on this, or did she just...
I don't know. My father actually was my manager and had handled all of it. My mother really didn't, you know too much about it. It all just sort of happened.
Uh-huh.
And then my father just kind of took care of things. And it just started to go. It just started from vaudeville and then radio and then all of that. And then I had my own show for Tasty Yeast after that, which was the same format.
Tasty Yeast?
Tasty Yeast. Uh-huh. It was a candy bar that you're supposed to give to children to make them eat, give them an appetite, you know.
Did it work?
Oh, it worked on me. I was as big as a balloon. I was a walking advertisement for it. But it was the same thing on Sunday mornings. It was 12:15. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. The 15 minutes, just a piano, an announcer, and I believe the announcer's name was Clyde Cattell, and my piano player and myself.
Uh-huh. Were you made appearances then on other broadcasts?
Yes, very big, like the, well, I don't really think that a lot of people will remember them. There was the Valspar program, and there was Leo Reisman and Vincent Lopez. Mm-hmm. They all had big radio shows at that time. The RKO Theater of the Air was another show.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that was really in connection with NBC, because I was signed to that network. And at that time at NBC, they had signed under their wing Graham McNamee, who was a very big announcer, Leo Reisman, Vincent Lopez, Amos and Andy, Rudy Valley, and myself. That was the list.
The biggest stars at radio.
That was the list.
Those days. Now, who went with you when you toured the country? Your dad. What about school?
First of all, when I started school, I went to professional children's school in New York, which also is a correspondence thing when you're on the road with a teacher. And then when I got to that awkward age, as we said, 12, 13, I went to parochial school in Jersey because my family moved to Jersey.
I see. Now, what about the movies? Did you do anything in the films?
Yes, I made a couple of movies when I was about, 10, 11, 9, somewhere around there. I think one was International House, which is played on television.
Oh, yeah, sure. That's with Burns and Allen are in that, and W.C.
Fields, Peggy Hopkins, Joyce.
Lionel Barrymore?
No. Bela Lugosi, because the whole premise of that picture, believe it or not, is television.
Right.
Which is a very weird thing.
Yeah.
And I did a couple of big broadcasts, but they were what we call today cameo roles. They were just spots, you know, in a picture. No, I never made a picture as a child star in that sense as an acting role. I did that later on, you know.
Now, you did a lot of recordings.
Though. Oh, yes, quite a few recordings. Brunswick recordings. Take a Picture of the Moon was one of them. Say That You Were Teasing Me was quite a few of those. And then on to, Brunswick, I remember. And then I think it was Decker. I'm not sure.
I have been searching for some of your early recordings, and I've been unable to come up with anything except come out, wherever
that,
you are.
That's a good one. That was a big hit because the other side is my Bluebird Singing the Blues, which is from the picture, International House.
Aha. Uh-huh.
That I sang in the picture.
Those were the days, huh?
Those were the days. I don't know. These aren't too bad.
These are good days, too, right. But we always enjoy... Remembering the good things.
I think that's the nicest thing in the world is to remember nice things.
What about your own impressions as a child when you were in a child star in show business?
I really don't remember too much of it. I remember little incidences, little things here and there, but I really don't remember too much of it. I guess it was just a way of life and something that I knew and just that was the way it was supposed to be.
Well, you didn't then feel that you were... special or unusual.
No, it was just
your way of life.
No,
right?
My mother and dad made sure that I never felt that way.
Uh-huh. Well, now your first what happened then between the age of 12 and I guess your first Broadway show was Top Banana?
No, first Broadway show I did was Spring in Brazil with Milton Berle, but it didn't last too long. And then I started playing nightclubs and hotels like the Palmer House and things like that, and the Shaperie.
Right.
In Chicago and things like that. And then I think that was 1950 or 51 that I did Top Banana. And that was on for about a year and a half. And then I continued doing nightclubs and some television appearances. I did the old Texaco Hour with Milton Berle. Mm-hmm. I must have done about 25 of those at least, you know.
Did you play a character on
No,
that?
No, no, no. I just did a number. I was a variety performer. Type
Okay.
of thing. And then I decided that I wasn't going to go traveling anymore, and I wasn't going to play clubs, and I was going to stay home, and I was going to concentrate on television.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to stay home in California with my husband and my daughter. So I did Gunsmoke and Mod Squad, I was going to say.
M Squad.
Uh-huh.
The Virginians?
See. Oh, I did two of those, yes. Uh-huh. And then I did Heinz Playhouse, and I did... And then those were all dramatic things, which were so far removed from anything I'd ever done
And you
before.
Played serious, very serious
Oh, yes,
serious
very
roles.
Much so, uh-huh. very much so.
What kind of roles did you play?
Well, in Gunsmoke, I played a 60-year-old woman who was the wife of some farmer or something, sawing wood, which was pretty natty. And then in Heinz Playhouse, I played a demented Southern woman who had like 8 children and was mentally very unbalanced and really, really very wild part. And in M Squad, I played owner of a saloon or a not a nightclub, but a gambling place. I was like a madam in a nightclub. And every part that I played that first year on television was something different than I had ever done before. And then I did a Bob Cummings show. And then they called me again for a Bob Cummings show. And then they called me again for a Bob Cummings show. And I wound up doing 3 years of Bob Cummings.
Now what,
I didn't have time to do anything else.
What character did you play on that?
I played one of the secretaries. That was a friend of Schulze's.
Aha, uh-huh, yeah. That was a good show.
A very good show. I learned an awful lot from that man. He was just wonderful to me.
Did from the Bob Cummings show, you know, I had a note that said you were in a television program called My Sister Eileen.
Yes, I did that after the Cummings show.
Was that a series?
Yes.
How long did that last?
About a year.
Who was that? Who else was
Elaine
in that?
Elaine Stritch.
Oh, of course, yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, how could we forget that? That's good.
Very
that
easily. Was it was very good. It was very good.
That never went into syndication.
No, it didn't. No. One year does not make the syndication. You need at least 3 under your belt for that.
Yeah. Because they want to run it 5 days a week.
If they can, so you need some, you know, to be able to use.
Speaking of 5 days a week, the great Dick Van Dyke Show, of which you were a very, very important part, is running 5 days a week in the Chicago area.
I know. They're running all over the country 5 days a week, really.
How did you get involved in that? Tell us how you got the role.
Well, I had known Danny Thomas and Sheldon Leonard for years and years and years. In fact, I think Danny Thomas' show was the only show that I'd never done.
Uh-huh.
And I kept saying to him, he would call me up to do a benefit, you know, and say, we want to do a show over here, you got to come. And I said... I said, why do you call me? And he said, oh, you're a great performer and you're this. And I said, how come you don't use me on your show?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, oh, don't worry. You know, and then Sheldon Leonard, who I think is one of the most brilliant men in the world. I just adore him and respect him the highest that I can ever say anything about anybody. And Sheldon used to tease me and say, don't worry. Your time will come. Don't worry. Your time will come. And he used to come to Vegas to see me because I used to play Vegas 2-3 times a year. And every time he came... He'd always see a good show, which was very fortunate for me, because sometimes you have your ups and your downs, you know. And he'd say, and I'd come out, you know, and I'd beam, because I knew I did a good show. And he'd say, very nice, you know, very nice. I'd say, like, is that all you're going to say? You know, I was really great, but I wanted him to say that, you know. And I said, you know, and he'd say, your time will come. So one day, out of the clear blue sky, the casting office called me and said, they want you over at the Desilu Studios. And I said, what is it for? And they said, it's for a new series. And I went over there. In the meantime, Bob Cummings had gone to Europe, or Japan rather, to make a picture with Shirley MacLaine called Geisha Girl.
Uh-huh.
Before he left, he called me. He says, I'm doing a new series. He says, I want to do it with you. And he says, we are going to do a series this fall. And I said, fine, great. So he was in Japan, and they called me for this thing, and I met Carl Reiner, and I was the first one cast after Dick. And I had never heard of Dick. You know, the saying in those days was, what's a Dick Van Dyke? You know? And they said, I read the thing, and I said, well, fine, who plays the other writer? And they said, well, we haven't picked him yet. And I said, well, what kind of a character is he? And he said, well, he's an older man, experienced man. And I said, well, what about Maury Amsterdam? And they said, gee, that's wonderful, never thought of that, you know. I said, he used to be a writer, and he'd be just great. And Maury and I have been friends for God knows how many years. And we used to call one another up periodically. He was living in Yonkers at the time, and I was living in California. And he always wrote nightclub material for me for my act. So I said, well, I think you ought to get Maury for the other writer. I think it'd be a beautiful balance. So he said, well, that's a great idea. So I ran home and I called Maury on the phone. I said, they're going to call you about a series, and this is it, and so forth and so on. And he says, are you going to do it? And I said, gee, I don't know. I said, I promised Bob Cummings I would do his. And, of course, my daughter says, don't go with, what's a Dick Van Dyke? She says, go with Bob Cummings. You know what's there, you know. And I said, I don't know. There's something about this that's awfully good. And I admired and respected Carl, too, because this is another genius.
Carl Reiner.
Oh, yes. So I said, I'll take this. And then Bob came back, and I was already had made the pilot for the Dick Van Dyke Show. And the pilot was sold the night we did it.
It was?
It was sold the night we did it. The sponsors were in the audience, and we did it. We used to work in front of a live audience with that show. We had about 300 or 400 people.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't unusual because Lucy did it.
Yeah.
No, Lucy did it, then Danny Thomas did it, then Joey Bishop did it, then most of the shows that came out of Desilu were done with a live audience. Mm-hmm. Because actually it's the best sense of comedy you can get timing as far as that's concerned. The only holdups that we'd have would be a wardrobe change or a camera reload, you know. So it was really like doing a play every week. And so we did the first show, and Sheldon came back and he said, well, we've sold it. He says, we go on the air in the fall. And so we started to make the shows, and we were canceled the first year. Mm. And Sheldon went back to New York and said, I believe in the show. I think the show is going to make it. And he begged on his knees to the sponsors to continue the show through the summer. And they went with him because of having faith in Sheldon, not having faith in the show. We knew it was good, but you know what goes on with television. Yeah. I mean, good shows are taken off and bad ones are put on and vice versa. And so the show went on, stayed on during the summer because of Sheldon, and it became a hit.
It was a great hit. It lasted for
5 years.
5 years, and it went off simply because
Dick wanted it. He thought 5 years was enough, that we were maybe running stale, and he didn't want anything less than the caliber that we had established.
Do you feel that way, too?
No, I think he was wrong.
Could have gone on.
I think it could have gone at least 2-3 more years. Yeah. Very easily.
They're hilarious. We watch
They're
those
brilliant.
Shows today. They
They're
knock
brilliant
me out.
Shows. They hold up. And they don't insult your intelligence.
Not at all.
And they're well written and they're well done. They really are classic.
The dialogue is terrific.
Well, we rehearsed for 4 days or 3 days, and so many changes were made that we never learned a script because we would change it as we would go. And the only thing we had to keep telling the cameraman was where to move with us, because working with three cameras, they have to move with you. So. But it was everybody was working on that show. Everybody's mind was working, and everybody helped one another, which comes through on that show. Everybody liked each other. And as I said, the common objective was the show. Make that a good show, and then everybody comes off well.
I've never seen a bad one.
Mm. We had a couple of dandies that going in, we were scared, you know, and then we worked so hard on it that even Sheldon used to come in and say, I don't think we're going to raise this one at all. By golly, we did. You know, it was unbelievable, the closeness and the relationships that went on in that show.
Did you improvise much?
Not on the show itself. During rehearsal, yes, quite a bit. And then whatever was good stayed in, you know.
Did Maury Amsterdam contribute a lot to it?
Very much. Every time we needed a joke on the spur of the moment, Maury was right there, because Maury can make a joke about anything.
Yeah.
At a moment's notice, you know.
It was great. It was great. Well, of course, now you're, since Alas and Alack, the Dick Van Dyke Show is off the air. Rose Marie has found great employment on Hollywood Squares during the daytime on television and on the
Doris Day Show.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's been on for 2 years.
No. This is going into the fourth year.
To the fourth year?
Mm-hmm. See, I wasn't with the show the first year.
Oh, you've been on it 2 years, though.
I've been on it two years. This will be my third year. Yeah.
You do a good job.
Oh,
You always do a good job. On Broadway, you appeared in a number of musical comedies.
No, I did Top Banana. I did Spring in Brazil. I did Top Banana. And then I've done a lot of musicals, like at home in the Valley Music and in Dallas and things. I did Bye Bye Birdie.
Oh, across the country.
And I did Call Me Madam, and I did a few other things like that.
Well, you were out here at Pheasant Run a couple of years ago.
2 years ago.
Was that in Everybody Loves Opal?
Opal, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And now you're starring out here in Everybody's Girl. Mm-hmm. I have to ask about your great impersonations. How many times have I seen you do the Jimmy Durante impersonation?
Well, that was about the only one that I really did because I loved Jimmy so, and I don't know, it kind of seemed natural for me to do it.
Well,
it was unusual for a girl to do a good Durante impression.
There's your husky voice coming mm-hmm. into play. Mm-hmm. How many times did you do that on the Van Dyke Show?
We did it on the pilot.
Yeah.
We did it on the pilot, which was the party.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I did it after that.
I must have seen you on the late talk shows or something.
Probably,
I've done
it a couple of times on Carson's show and on when Joey Bishop had his show and things like that.
Well, we've taken you from Baby Rosemary all the way through the Doris Day Show,
mm-hmm.
and it's been a terrific career, and
you have
contributed a lot to the entertainment
of this country.
We think so very much. What's ahead for Rosemary?
I don't know. I play it as it comes. I don't plan on anything. I don't, if it happens, it happens. My brother surprised me at one time when he said to me, he said, you just keep going from one thing to the next, and I never realized it, but I do. And Maury has an idea for a new series that he wants me to do with him, which I might do. I don't know. Our starting date on the Doris Day Show is in June. I don't know what goes from there, mm-hmm. you know. I don't know whether we'll go on for another year, maybe half a year, maybe we won't go on at all, I don't know. But whatever happens will happen, and I'll make my decision and go.
Whatever happens will be good for you.
I hope so.
And it'll be good for all of us who enjoy and love Rosemary. Thank you very much
Thank you very much, Chuck.
This
that
time
was very, very sweet of you.
And those were the days.
Thank you.